In Brussels today, Secretary of State John Kerry said airstrikes conducted by the U.S.-led coalition have inflicted significant damage on ISIS in Iraq and Syria. Meantime, in Washington, there are numerous reports that President Obama is about to nominate former Deputy Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter to help shape the strategy for that fight as Secretary of Defense. If confirmed, Carter would replace Chuck Hagel, who is resigning. Military analyst Andrew Bacevich is a retired Army colonel, professor emeritus of international relations and history at Boston University's Pardee School of Global Studies, and he's with us now. And Professor Bacevich, first, if, as expected, President Obama nominates Ashton Carter, what would your reaction be?
Well, I think I'd have a wait-and-see attitude, and I'll tell you why. Carter is a weapons guy. For the most part, his experience in the Defense Department has revolved around shaping the military instrument rather than using the military instrument. It's not quite clear what would be the new ideas that he would bring to the table with regard to how to fight ISIS or what to do about the Syrian civil war and the like.
But you have said that it almost doesn't matter who gets nominated, given all of the struggles that are going on right now that aren't going away and the president's response to them so far.
I wonder if this president is interested in new ideas. Arguably, his major foreign policy initiatives have now all failed. The opening to the Islamic world symbolized by the Cairo speech, the reset with Russia, the promise of bringing Iraq to a responsible end and winning in Afghanistan. I see little evidence that in the last couple of years of his presidency, Mr. Obama wants to begin anew, wants to consider a radical course change. What I see is an administration that is content to manage the quagmire that we've managed to get ourselves into. It's not his fault that we got into the quagmire. It's he and several of his predecessors. But I think we're kind of stuck. Don't think he sees a way out. And so, you know, my guess is that Mr. Carter, as Secretary of Defense, actually may not have a markedly different mandate than Mr. Hagel had.
But you believe that President Obama's entire foreign policy has been a failure?
No, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, in many respects, if we're doing a comparison, who do you like, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, when it comes to foreign policy, I'll take Obama. But if we are to judge him based on the objectives that he stated for his administration, then we can't say he did particularly well. We haven't got out of Iraq. We haven't achieved success in Afghanistan. We haven't been able to establish a new relationship with the Islamic world. And we certainly haven't had any sort of a reset with Russia. That's what he said he was going to do.
Let's talk about ISIS. You and I spoke in June when they really were starting to take control of swaths of Iraq. And President Obama had approved airstrikes but had deployed only about 300 military advisors to Iraq at that time from the U.S. I want to listen to something that you said then.
The problem is that when you go in partway, it becomes difficult then to withdraw. To withdraw is to acknowledge failure. And the political costs for him of acknowledging failure are going to be great.
Now, President Obama since then has increased the number of U.S. troops in Iraq to around 3,000. Do you think he's going to have to send even more, that he is not going to want to acknowledge failure there before he leaves office and that perhaps even he'll send in combat troops?
Well, the president's in a fix. My guess is that he doesn't want part of his legacy to be a complete renewal of the American effort to pacify Iraq. Hence his repeated refrain of no boots on the ground. On the other hand, the president certainly doesn't want to see ISIS triumph and destroy the current Iraqi regime and make something of this so-called caliphate. So what the president's trying to do is to figure out what is the minimum amount of force that can be committed to, if not defeat ISIS, at least prevent ISIS from achieving its maximalist objectives. And right now, the bet is that air power with a substantial advisory effort might do the trick. Now, there are many people who are skeptical about that. General Martin Dempsey, the chairman of the chief of staff, has indicated that he himself is one of the skeptics and has indicated that from his professional military perspective, a greater U.S. ground presence may be required. But the White House certainly is not eager at this point to have to take on that issue and make any further decisions.
But is there any exit strategy if you're just dealing with airstrikes to keep ISIS from gaining any more ground?
Well, the exit strategy is to pass this problem to your successor. I think I'm correct in saying that people in the White House, certainly people in the Pentagon, have indicated that the war against ISIS is something like a 4 or 5 year proposition.
Kerry said this morning that he thinks it will go on for years.
Guess what? The Obama administration is not going to go on for years. So what the policy seems to be is, let's prevent abject failure. Let's not fully Americanize the conflict. And let's hand this thing off to our successors. And you know, one might say, well, isn't that kind of cynical? But in fact, of course, that's what the George W. Bush administration did to this president, handing off both the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War to him.
Andrew Bacevich, nothing happens in a vacuum. And this is all happening as we're watching the price of oil tumble and tumble and tumble. I wonder, do you think that that reduces the U.S. interest in the region, in Iraq, in Syria, if the price of oil is dropping to the point where disruption on the ground there is not going to impact Americans' wallets?
Well, I think what should cause us to reevaluate the strategic importance of the Persian Gulf is not the price of oil, but rather the availability of oil and natural gas in North America. That the assumption, going back to the beginning of this misadventure in 1980, at the time when Jimmy Carter promulgated the Carter Doctrine, the reigning assumption is that somehow or other the well-being of the United States of America is tied to the Persian Gulf. And increasingly, it seems to me that's not true. Now, it is true that the well-being of some of our friends and allies is still tied to the Persian Gulf. But I'm not persuaded that somehow the United States should shoulder the burden of policing a part of the world if, in fact, our direct vital interests are no longer involved there.
Are our interests involved in Afghanistan?
I don't think so. I don't know how anybody can make a case that in Afghanistan per se, the United States has really vital interest, that we have to have U.S. forces in Afghanistan, that we have to engage in a protracted nation-building operation. There are other ways, less costly ways, for us to meet our relatively modest interests in that country.
Andrew Bacevich, a retired Army colonel who is professor emeritus of international relations and history at Boston University's Pardee School of Global Studies. Professor Bacevich, thank you so much, as always, for coming in.
Thank you.